everyone, and welcome to Coffee with Innovate Finance, our podcast series where we speak to industry leaders on financial innovation and fintech. Our podcasts are available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts. I'm Hayley Bromelow, COO of Innovate Finance, and today I'm delighted to be joined by Nick Harding, co-founder and CEO at Floro. Floro is a technology-led consumer lender, offering unsecured personal loans via their full suite of products. But who better to tell you more about it than Nick himself? So Nick, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Hayley. Very nice to meet you.
So just to kick off, I guess, for the listeners at home, can you tell us a little bit more about your background? What was your journey to co-founder and CEO?
Yeah, sure. So it's really a blend of technology and financial services. So my education was all focused on computer science and data and maths, really statistical sort of focus. But then went into a career in banking. And actually, my career in banking, which was with what's now called NatWest, between about 2005 and 2010, really taught me a lot of how not to do it rather than how to do it. And you know, going through the global financial crisis there, so you know, really was a very interesting period of time and one where we learned a lot. But actually, then what came after that, you know, that first wave of fintechs in around about 2010, 2011, that period of time was actually the sort of precursor to Floro. And Matt and I, Matt's a co-founder at Floro, really felt that it was, you know, destiny for us to go on and build a fintech business, given the backgrounds that we had.
Amazing. And you touched upon it just then. So it was at LendingWorks. It's now been rebranded to Floro. Obviously, can you tell us a little bit about what Floro's vision, mission is, and maybe the purpose behind that rebrand?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, why don't I cover sort of, you know, where Floro came from first? You know, the original idea behind Floro was one that takes us back, actually. You know, we've just celebrated our 10th birthday as a company. So
oh, on the congratulations.
Thank you. on the 21st of November 2012, we were sat thinking about, you know, how we're going to solve problems in financial services. And actually, when you sort of think back to that period of time, the world was still reeling from the financial crisis. Consumer financial services were, you know, the customer experience was excruciating. Mm-hmm. You know, loan documentation still needed wet ink signatures, for example. Credit data was very basic. There was no such thing as instant payout or instant remittance. Open banking didn't exist, and I don't think Innovate Finance existed either.
Nope.
So, you know, when you think all of that way, what we really saw at that point in time was the big banks were just failing their customers, and the customer experience they were providing just wasn't good enough. So our question was, what are we going to do about that? Mm. And we really looked at many markets, and we saw the biggest opportunity the biggest appropriate opportunity for us was in the personal loans market. We could see that many markets had major sort of structural challenges, but we couldn't see that the solutions were as possible as they are or were in personal loans. And so that's why we ultimately, you know, set out to build a, you know, a leading personal loans business. The big driver for us, though, as I've already mentioned a couple of times, was always to come back to the customer and say, actually, how can we make this better for the customer? And I know that sounds cliched, really. But actually, you know, we genuinely mean it. And whether it's our product engineers or our software engineers or the data scientists or anyone working in the business, they're just constantly thinking about how can we serve our customers better. And really, that led us to sort of game changing our customer experience.
Amazing. And that's a great purpose as well, isn't it? Putting consumers at the heart of your business and what you do. So, yeah, fantastic. And 10 years, amazing as well. I bet you that's flown by. So what were, I guess, the challenges that you initially faced as an organization when you first started out? And how would you say they differ to the challenges that you face now?
Yeah, and well, I mean, the challenges on day one were many, really. You know, we were a small team trying to solve problems, and you know, everywhere we looked, there were more problems ultimately. the thing that we kept on coming back to was that we were very good at building technology and delivering projects and customer experience. We're really good at looking at data and how data could be used to enhance the customer experience, but we didn't have any customers. And we didn't really have any budgets, in a material sort of sense. So, and then we looked around and we could see, the big banks had all of the customers and they had massive budgets, but they were terrible at building technology. So that was the main sort of initial challenge that we had to overcome. And really that led us to, what the business is today, which is an embedded lending business. We could see that there were many large corporates that had those same problems as the big banks. But ultimately, they still wanted to be able to offer products to their customers. And we felt that we could enable them to offer products to their customers via this embedded lending approach. And actually, when you look at it, embedded lending as a term didn't exist then. We were just trying to build a business and we were trying to acquire customers and attract customers to come and get a loan from Fluro. We really saw it through that sort of problem-solving lens. Mm-hmm. And when you look at the outcome, it was kind of a win-win-win, really, because those big corporates were able to create a new product and therefore revenue stream. Importantly, their customers got the best in class product when they were doing it. And of course, it meant that we could attract a much bigger market.
Yeah. So you touch upon it there around the embedded piece and obviously embedded finance, big theme right now. So what is Fluro's move towards this then? What are, I guess, the plans going into next year and beyond?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I touched on the fact that we felt we could sort of solve problems for large corporates and offer products to their customers. An example of that is our partnership with Direct Line Group and also Churchill, one of their other brands. And that business has 17 million active customers, and they have a very interesting proposition for their customers from an insurance angle. But to go and start lending to those customers would potentially cost them hundreds of millions of pounds to be able to build the business required to do that. Whereas their partnership with us has enabled to do that much more quickly and much more easily. Yeah. And also gets them straight to a point where they have a best-in-class product. And with a lending product, it really relies on a lot of data over many years to be able to deliver the product, because naturally models need to be calibrated over a long period of time, whether that's sort of pricing engines, credit engines, etc. And so their ability to scale via using our embedded lending platform meant it was much quicker for them to get to market, and also they got to a best-in-class product immediately.
Yes, yeah, definitely. And we see a lot of that with the different partnerships and things happening in the fintech space. So it's so valuable. So I guess if we look at that, how does your tech stack differ to others out there in the market then?
Yeah, I think you could probably put it into two categories. You've got the incumbent providers and the sort of challenger providers. And incumbent providers, I've said it many times, it's easy for fintechs to take sort of pot shots at banks, but actually what they have to deal with is very, very difficult. The problems they have to solve are very, very difficult, because they obviously have massive legacy IT estates and tech estates, which are just very, very good, difficult to join together. When I was working at NatWest, they spent a great deal of time trying to build a tech platform that meant you wouldn't have to log into six different platforms every day and you'd have to log into one. And when they launched it, it just meant that, and indeed it carried on, that you just had to log into seven every day instead. the way that large organizations try to solve these problems is just, it's just very, very difficult.
Yeah.
And so ultimately, our tech stack being built, from scratch and constantly invested in, is one that's using, the latest technologies. We have a Kotlin architecture that's, running in AWS infrastructure. It's extremely fast, but it's not only fast in terms of customer experience, but also it's our engineers are able to work on it in a very agile and rapid fashion as well. So an example of this is we built a new machine learning pricing engine, or machine learning capable pricing engine, over the summer. And it's something that we could put together in a couple of months, whereas actually some of the incumbent providers take a couple of months just to make one pricing chain, let alone sort of build a whole new engine and launch it into the market. So we think that the way that our technology estate is set up basically as a competitive advantage, and that's why we continue to invest in it.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of working in a adaptable, fast-paced industry as well when it comes to, yeah, the fintech space. So, yeah, how, I mean, out of interest, how big is your team now?
We have about 85 people in the team. But actually, it's an interesting one because many fintechs, I think, for a long period of time, almost saw it as a badge of honour as how many, you know, as in what's the size of the team and how large it is. We almost saw it as the opposite of that. And it really takes us back to our roots in some ways, which is I really sort of measure success on you know, how much we can achieve with how few people we have in the team.
Yeah.
And so actually, we've always been hell-bent on trying to restrict the amount of individual people we bring into the business, instead focus on automating instead. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're a business that's, you know, always been revenue generating from day one. And we focus heavily on making sure that we have that sort of solid and scalable platform to leverage from in terms of being a revenue generating business. And in turn, that sort of led us to saying, well, actually, rather than throwing people at problems, we'll throw technology at problems and make them scalable instead. And so then in turn, that leads to having a team of a very technical team of mathematicians and data scientists and engineers, rather than sort of a sprawling team of hundreds of people sort of doing operational sort of roles. And that's a big focus for us as a business. So yeah, I say 85 with pride that we haven't allowed that to be hundreds and hundreds.
You could be a lot bigger, but you've been smart about it by the sounds of it. So well done.
That's the plan, at least.
So I guess, you know, we have to talk about the cost of living crisis and what's going on in the current economic climate. Has Fluro seen a substantial increase in the number of people seeking personal loans during this current climate?
Well, it's an interesting question, actually. So the whole market, it has reduced, and it's reduced quite quickly in the last sort of 2 months. When you look at a whole of market view, we've seen about a 1/3 reduction in size of the market in the last 2 months. And that's obviously totally in line with the interest rate environment that we've seen, you know, come about so quickly over this, well, late summer and autumn. However, what we see within that market is actually a very interesting cross-section, because actually the challenger brands who are, you know, acquiring customers via partnerships and have amazing customer experience, as Fluro does, have been able to sustain their market share better, whereas the incumbent providers have dropped off further. And so, you know, ultimately, you know, we have a thesis that customers are going to their bank, and then all of a sudden, rather than seeing the cheap money that went on for so long, that they're seeing a much higher APR, which is making them look around. And so therefore, you know, are more likely to come to Fluro in doing so.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I guess, yeah, see obviously how it translates to 2023 activity as well. So I guess looking ahead, as we say, going into 2023 and looking over the past 10 years, as you said, when you were founded, what would you say to date are your biggest success stories that you'd like to share?
Yeah. It's funny because sort of, yeah, whilst you're at the coalface, you sort of, we don't necessarily celebrate the success stories enough.
Yeah, you have to reflect, don't you? Yeah, have absolutely. Time to reflect.
What's next? you are right. We absolutely need to reflect from sometimes. I think one of the things that I'm most proud of, which, you know, you'll have probably got loud and clear already, is our customer experience. But actually, you know, when you look at not just the level of customer experience, your net promoter scores are off the charts, you know, et cetera, which we're really, really proud of. But actually, the breadth of customers that we are now, basically able to reach. So we reach about 10% of all working age adults every year. So we see about 400,000 unique requests onto our APIs every month. And when you annualize that, you know, 4.8 million, there's about 45 million working age adults in the UK. So we're seeing about 10% of all working age adults in the UK, which is really staggering when you think about it. And so it's not just, as I say, the quality of the product and the experience we're generating, but also the breadth of the range of customers that we can attract. Also, you know, our embedded lending proposition is one that we are really, really proud of. You know, we think that For example, with Direct Line, the proposition that we have available for them is one that is unrivaled in the market. And so therefore, there were some incumbent providers providing this sort of arrangement in the past, and ultimately they just didn't work very well. And so therefore, we think there'll be a significant move from anyone who's already doing, or a brand that's using an embedded lending provider is probably going to be looking for new providers, or vice versa. There'll be lots of new brands coming to say, they want to open up that revenue stream.
Wow, some impressive stats there. So very, very successful. So congratulations on that. So I guess as we wrap up and wrap up this conversation and look ahead, what's next for Floro? Have you got any big announcements or things that you would like to share on the horizon?
Yeah, it's a really interesting time, isn't it? Because we're on one hand, like everyone, just very cautious about being, prudent and risk averse, considering the backdrop that we have. But the other side, we're very excited about, what the future holds and building a business. I think, we take every decision we make, we think about a long-term approach. We're an organization that's private equity backed as opposed to VC backed. And so therefore, we're very much looking for building value over the long term. And so there isn't, an immediate sort of focus on, we're racing to do this project or that project, but instead it's building the entire infrastructure and architecture of the business simultaneously, whilst also growing the customer base rapidly. And all of that is coming together really nicely. So we think, in a weird sense, that 2023 could be a year that we scale the business, fairly significantly. And certainly, when we feel that the sort of negative economic environment starts to subside, will be a period of time that we certainly will be looking to grow. So really, that is our big focus for 2023. There'll be partnerships, there'll be announcements, I'm sure, et cetera, et cetera. But it's, when you look at it as a sort of bigger picture, it's to navigate, these difficult economic times and to support our customers in going through that. And then coming out of the other side, to be ready to really, put on the afterburners.
Yeah. Got a busy year ahead by the sounds of it. But yeah, I wish you all the best. Nick, it's been an absolute pleasure to speak with you today. Really enjoyed our discussion. So thank you. To our listeners, we hope you've enjoyed this episode too. Please keep an eye out for upcoming episodes on our podcast channels. All our previous episodes are available on our website. So please take a look at our catalogue for many more insights on fintech and financial innovation. Thanks once again, Nick, today for joining us. And thank you for our listeners. Bye for now.